the Iowa Basketball Podcast, the Big Control Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. I've got Matt Moore Skyping. I am finally warmed up after being on a frozen lake.
You went golfing on a lake?
Called the Iced Tea Open up in Cross Lake, Minnesota. Moonlight Bay. Fantastic spot to enjoy a beverage up there. And, there was one. I pretty much realized I'm winter Jesus because I just walked on water. And two, they had a little mini golf course for charity. It was to help send kids to camp. They actually raised like $21,000, which is pretty good. I mean, it's a really small town and, you know, there weren't a ton of people there. There was a good crowd, but like not like an overwhelming amount of people there. And so the fact that they raised 21 grand is really awesome. And we got there like 11 and then around with like a half hour to go, which was, I don't know, maybe 5.5 hours after we got there, we realized, oh, we've got to get on the lake and go golf. So we did a hole-in-one challenge. Here's a problem. No one has left-handed clubs. This guy's left-handed. So I was swinging a three right-handed and actually almost got it in the hole-in-one challenge. It's like 30 feet or something like that. Not a huge thing. And then there's like a ramp and you're trying to get into a kiddie pool for the hole-in-one challenge. This really small kiddie pool. But I came very close. It bounced just over it. And I feel like I outswung my friend Trevor. So that was good. Who is right-handed?
It's just more evidence, really, of your dominance at inebriated sports.
I don't say I actually play well. I just never play the worst when I'm inebriated. That's the important thing. Don't be worse.
You're the Luke Ridnour of
exactly. Sports. Yeah, I take a lot away from the team, but I give a little bit. A
lot of good basketball between Friday and Sunday.
Yeah, I saw quite a bit of it.
It was a really great weekend of basketball. It was really compelling stuff. You had the Heat getting a big win versus the Grizzlies. Denver went over Oklahoma City, which is a fantastic game I was at. And then on Sunday, we had some fireworks.
Yeah.
Especially between Blake Griffin's legs.
This is where we're going to disagree right away. Yep. I think he tried to hit him. I don't think he was aiming for his nuts, if we can say that. It's a weird thing. Clearly, he tries to hit him because he slashes at him. But he's looking up before he makes contact. Personally, if I'm trying to hit a guy in the jewels, I'm keeping my eye on the ball. I'm swinging through contact.
Here's my thing. If I want to hit you in the cojones,
yes,
and I don't want to get busted for it,
right?
I'm going to swing. I'm going to try and strike you while not looking at you. I'm going to try and strike you somewhere between the legs. It's like saying, like, oh, I was just trying to hit him between the legs. How was I supposed to know his testicles were there? I mean, honestly, like, of course you're going to hit his nuts. Like, he swung that way. And I guess we're entering a new Bynum 2011 territory.
Yeah.
Or I guess it's 2010, where even if he wasn't deliberately aiming, he was showing a reckless abandon for Blake Griffin's testicles.
Oh, I don't know that he was showing an abandon for the onions. I think he was showing a fit of rage where he lost control. And the weird thing is that because this is a predominantly male environment, and because these are two males, and because the guy gets hit in the testicles, and we know what that feels like, we know that that hurts, we freak out about it. Like, if he punched him in the heart, or in the liver, or in the kidney, that's actually a much more dangerous thing. Like, if he's flat out, like, just punched him in the kidney, trying to make his kidney bleed, that would be a much more dangerous thing than hitting him in the testicles. And yet we freak out.
From a percentage standpoint, though, if he were to cause damage down there, he could bleed out and die.
I mean, Serge Ibaka is a strong guy, but that one karate chop is not causing that kind of damage. I think that the fact that he hits it, where he hit him, is such an overblown thing. It happens, and guys get hit in the testicles all the time. Sometimes it's intentional, sometimes it's not. But the fact that it's the testicles shouldn't make everyone freak out more about it. Like, if he punched him in the stomach like that, would it get such a reaction? No.
No, but I think it probably should. I went back on this. It was one where I'm okay to be like, well, it was intentional, but I'm not like, he's a dirty player. He should be banned. I'm not like.
Oh right, no, he lost his head a little bit.
Say about it. I just want to be very clear. Like, I think it's ridiculous to be like, oh, like there are people that were like, oh, I don't think it was intentional. Like, why are you kidding me? Like, he winds up.
No, he definitely meant to hit him. I just don't think he aimed for his testicles.
And it's, I mean, it's not nearly as bad as the Batum hit from the Olympics.
That was something.
That is a targeted.
Yeah.
Assault.
Right. I really don't think Serge Ibaka was aiming for his testicles. I think he was just aiming for Blake Griffin.
Griffin was holding him. He was holding his jersey. And the idea is that Ibaka was trying to get loose of him. But I don't understand if you're battling, I know you don't want to give up position. I get that. There's a number of ways for, one, just grab his wrist and remove it. And if you're not strong enough for that, you know, move, if he lifts up with his left arm and comes through and then elbows back to box him out, he's accomplished the same thing. Like, that's why I couldn't figure it out, is because I was like, why would he possibly reach over to hit him?
Here's a problem I have with this, and I'm going to blame the Matrix. There is no 360 freeze frame camera. Like, that's a lot of calculating to do in a situation where you feel you're being manhandled and you're trying to break free. It's not like, well, I learned in self-defense class to break the wrist, walk away. Like, that's not what happens. Like,
yeah, but even then, like, I mean, guys are battling all the time, and they know that. I mean, we see guys battle all the time, and they're using it, and they, you know, and to be fair, to Ibaka's credit, actually, like, what's the biggest thing that we go after guys, like, what's the biggest thing the league goes after guys for when they're boxing out? Going high.
Yeah.
Like, you go high with the elbow, you're... Goodbye.
But here's the thing: there is no one way to fight for position. It, like, the situation dictates what it does, like what you're supposed to do, and the fact that it's like, oh, he could have gone up, he could have broken the wrist, he could have done that. Like, no, he had his body in a certain position. He's like, all right, I'm gonna hit down, because you can swing down, knock a guy's arm away, and have it work sometimes. Like, just like you can swing up and have it work. I don't think there's no calculation there. Like, there's a split second of rage in which he decides, oh, I'm gonna hit this guy.
I wasn't saying it was a calculation. It was more of just, I don't understand, like, why you would, like, instinctively, I would never think to be like, oh, I'm going to reach over and hit him, especially when the ball's coming. Because then I'm like, one, I'm turning my body inwards, which means I'm sacrificing position. It's harder for him to jump in that position to rebound.
I still think you are pretending that there is a lot of time to think here.
Okay. Well, I'm not really. I'm saying instinctively. Instinctively, I would move my left. That's what I would do, is I would be like, okay, the arm's across me. Like, instinctively, I would try, because that's, like, his left arm is being restrained, right, by Griffin's right reaching across him.
Right.
I'm saying instinctively, that's what I would do. Not even necessarily premeditated. Do you think he gets a suspension for it?
Probably, just because there's such a big deal being made about it. Like, I really think it bothers me that he hit him in the nuts, because it makes it a story when it really doesn't need to be.
I was thinking about this last night. I was driving. I had to drive an hour to go drop off a ticket. I hate the city of Thornton, by the way, if you're listening. Just say no. You have a very rude police officer. Anyway, I had to go drive it. I was thinking about this. At what point for you, because you and I are, I mean, I've moved much more moderate in terms of the physical contact stuff. But for you, at what point would the league have to get to, like, where is the line for you in terms of, oh man, we really can't have that, that's too dangerous? Like,
I think
we really gotta make sure that this physicality gets kind of taken down a level. What does it have to hit the level of, like, the 70s when guys are swinging?
I think if you ball up your fist, like, you can slap somebody, you can karate chop. I mean, no one's aside from DJ and Banga, like, no one's a judo master out here, you know? Like, there are things where, like, shoving is fine. If you're swinging an elbow intentionally at someone's head, that's an issue. If you're balling up your fist, that's an issue. It, like, something like that, like, where you're chopping at someone in the midsection, like, I just don't think that's a big deal. Like, a lot worse goes on underneath the boards. I don't, like, that's, physicality is not a bad thing.
Right. Have you seen the Artest play on Fareed?
Refresh me.
I didn't even catch it in the Laker game versus the last Lakers-Nuggets game. Fareed got caught with an MWP elbow, and it rattled him pretty good.
Right, yeah.
Ben Hogman made kind of a deal about it, and then, by the way, this is another hilarious instance of, like, how the media works, and, like, being in locker rooms, you understand it more and more. Like, they went to George Karl after shoot around on Friday, and they said, and they want to touch on, like, what did you think about this play? The league upgraded to a flagrant two.
Yeah.
And Karl, this is the second time this has happened, where Karl deliberately, I could tell, and he makes it very obvious, he doesn't want to answer the freaking question.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, I'm always the advocate of, if you don't want to answer the question, don't. But Carl starts talking. He's like, you know, I don't really decide that. I don't decide whether or not they're upgraded. Nobody's told me that. But he said, I did think it was premeditated. And like, boom, that's your headline.
Yeah.
And it sounds like Carl was like, hey, let me tell you about that meta world piece right now. And instead, Carl like would never have brought it up. Like, it's happened and it's over. But then Carl says it's premeditated. So then they go back to Meta. And Meta went on this little rant over the weekend about physicality and talking about how he and a bunch of the guys in his age group grew up watching the 90s. And right. Now that's what they learned to play. That's the kind of, they bring a passion to the game, and their passion is translated by what they saw. And what they saw was guys beating the crap out of each other in those Knicks Heat series.
Right.
And I think that, and you know me, I'm an advocate for player safety. That's my concern. I forget who it was, but there was a player over the weekend that was basically saying he got elbowed in the head, and he was like, "Yeah, my jaw's a little loose, and there's some teeth that are a little bit loose, and I just feel really rattled." And like, I always get this whenever somebody comes at me with the whole, and not you, but there are guys that are more extreme than you that are like, this league is all wusses, and like we need to like completely get rid, like everything should be allowed and all this stuff. And I always want to be like, you need to go read The Punch by John Feinstein.
Sure.
That's where I changed a lot. Was I used to be very much like, oh, come on, it's sport. And then I read Feinstein's The Punch and read what happened to Rudy Tomjanovich, and I was like, these guys are massive and they're moving incredibly fast. And it's not so much any one individual. It's that wrong timing. It's that
right.
Guy swings an elbow and a guy happens to be moving his head just right, and then all of a sudden you've got the possibility for a very serious head injury.
Here's the problem with this. That happened 45 years ago. I mean, when did that happen? 70-something?
Yeah.
72, 73, something like that? This is such a different time. I don't think the league is a bunch of wusses. I think society is a bunch of wusses. Like, back then you could get in an argument with a guy, have a little scrap, like, you know, throw some punches, and then everything was, like, solved. Like, and I'm not saying that's the way to do it. I'm just saying, like, back in those times, that's what happened. So fist fighting was a more watered-down thing. It was just a part of what happened, you know, what people did to decide things. Not that that's a good thing. That's how it was. And now, God, you look at a kid wrong on a schoolyard, and that kid's going to get suspended, and you know, you're going to have a parent-teacher conference and stuff. Like, there's just the way things have moved that fist fighting isn't something that decides anything anymore. Like,
it's crazy, too, because, I mean, I've been not in a lot of fist fights, but I've been in a few, and it's weird to me because, like, now that I'm older, though, like, I think about things differently because I'm just like, Jesus, like, you can get tagged with assault. Like,
oh, sure, yeah. Oh, yeah, like, I look back at how I was 10 years ago, I'm like, oh, my God, like, I'm an idiot now, but I was an idiot back then, you know? Like, it's just something that, you know, and that's where, like, with the league and physicality, players say, as long as you are not exceptionally reckless on a consistent basis, isolated incidents here and there, they just don't bother me. Like, people want to say Ron Artest is a dirty player or a reckless player. He has had plenty of times, but he's not consistently like that. He's a physical player, and stuff like that happens. And I don't think one incident's here, one incident there. I just don't think that's anything to freak out about and be like, player safety is at risk. Like, it's not.
I'm more of the position that these players have existed throughout the course of league history.
Right.
This has always been a part of the game. And while that's not necessarily a reason for it to continue, you know, you have to corral him in terms of things like the Harden hit. That's where you have to be like, no, 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 no. I actually, one of my favorite things was a couple of years ago, Dwight got tagged for a suspension during the playoffs for an elbow he didn't land.
Yeah.
He swung high, and yeah. They were like, you're gone. Everyone's like, he didn't even make contact, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, you cannot swing an elbow that high with that much force.
Right.
If he lands that, somebody could end up in the hospital. And you just, like, that is a very serious thing. I mean, it's rare, though, because it's like, it's not just the head, but it's like, well, the head is really the only place that you can hit. Like, you would have to hit somebody so hard in the kidneys or in the back to do enough damage. You know, the only real thing I can think of that's outside of the head that was really, like, that dangerous was Bynum's hit on Gerald Wallace a few years ago.
Yeah.
And again, that's one where people really argued that one. And for me, it was, that was one of those, everything went wrong at the same time. It was like, if Wallace had been at a different angle, if he landed differently, all of these things would have been different. But right. You have to control your body enough to prevent the possibility of that, because you just can't have you need to do everything you can to be like, I'm going to play physical to the point of no one is going to get put in the hospital.
Yeah. The thing is, like, if – should he be suspended? Personally, I don't care. If he is, fine, a game, whatever. If not, fine him. Nothing needs to happen. You get to this point where we're such a litigation-based society, and everyone's so afraid of everything that you get to a certain point where you're like, these guys are fine. Like, these guys are okay, they're safe. Griffin got hit in the nuts. That really sucks for him. He's fine 5 hours later. Like,
to Griffin's credit, Griffin afterwards was like, I don't know. He's like, we were battling.
Yeah, because he knows that's part of the game. He's a physical player. He knows that stuff happens. Not that you getting hit in the nuts is a regular thing, but it happens more often than people think on a basketball court.
And I will say this, though. The preferred reaction, and this is one thing that I will say is upsetting, he just should have been removed then. Like, eject him for the final 7 minutes, and then you have, like, or 2 minutes or however long it was, and then you have a fair thing. They checked the replay. They saw it was intentional. Upgrade to a flagrant 2, toss him, and then you're fine. Ibaka went on, drew a foul on Griffin, went to the other end, got a score, and then made another defensive play. Like, yeah. He wound up being a huge swing in that game.
And that's the thing where the fact that they reviewed it and didn't think that it was an ejectable offense really makes me think it's overblown. And not that they're always right with that stuff, but he didn't have a closed fist, so it's not a punch, right?
Right.
Which is pretty much the rule.
That's a big thing.
Give or take. Like, he does wind up, and he does clearly mean to hit him. I don't think he targeted a specific area. I think he was just swinging. But the fact that they didn't eject him, I'm kind of like, ugh. I see what you're saying. Like, if they had ejected him, there's his punishment. No, nothing further needed.
The fact that he doesn't lose the money.
Yeah, the fact that they didn't, like, I don't know. Like, he got hit in the nuts. Big deal. He's fine.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, though. I will say this, and this is not from your perspective, like, because you're consistent. I will say, if Blake Griffin had done this, or Metta World Peace had done this, or DeMarcus Cousins had done this, the reaction is entirely different.
Oh,
I will
for
say,
sure.
Ibaka is developing a little bit of reputation as that guy on the Thunder. This is not the first time he's kind of been involved in this kind of stuff. Like, he's not.
This is the Kendrick Perkins effect.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I mean, what you need those kind of guys.
Yeah.
You know?
It was an impressive win by the Thunder, but by the way, just to kind of corral them and control them. Especially after, I was really impressed coming off that Denver loss, which is really emotional, too. They had a day off, but that was a pretty good comeback win for them, or not a comeback, but a bounce back win for them to go into LA and just control the course of that game as well as they did.
Because them beating the Clippers mentally is a lot more important for them than beating the Nuggets. Like, they know they can beat the Nuggets.
Interestingly, you said that, and Royce Young agrees with you as well. And I want to kind of get into this. Okay, so you know that I'm never going to be like, oh, well, they won the regular season, therefore it will translate to the postseason. Right?
I'm definitely not a guy that subscribes to that at all.
No, but you know I'm not either,
right?
Like, you know that I'm always like, well, no, it doesn't matter.
Right.
You know? I don't think that you can definitively say it's irrelevant, though. I don't think you should just necessarily just throw all of it out. If you have a top-tier team in a conference that's going to be a playoff team matched up against these teams, and particularly this one particular note, the Nuggets don't have a losing – they're either tied with or have won the season series with all of the top six seeds in the West.
Yeah, they're a very good regular season team. That's what I've said about them for 3 years. They're a very good regular season team.
Mark Kislow of the Denver Post agrees with you in terms of what you're getting at there. It was funny because the idea is, like, they don't have a closer, they don't have that guy. And then Ty Lawson steps up and hits a big shot on Friday.
Hey, he made a play. Good for him.
You don't think that he's capable?
No.
My thing is, I feel like they have enough guys. It is not outside the realm of possibility. I'm not saying it's likely to happen. And like, this is the real key here. Is what I'm trying to get to is a level of moderation where we could still expect for the Clippers to win and still say the Nuggets are going to have a good chance at being able to pull an upset in whatever their first round or second round matchup is.
Second round matchup? Oof, I don't know about that.
I think they can hang with the Clippers. I really do. I'm starting to really sell on this Clippers team the longer we go in the season.
I mean, you love
Chris Paul.
They hung with the Lakers last year. They never were going to beat them, though.
They're a better team this year, definitively.
So
Clippers
are better this year than the Lakers were last year.
I would agree with that. But, well, they were. They're starting.
No, they're
there
fine.
There are some problems with the Clippers.
No,
there are some
they're
issues
fine.
With
this is the ebb and flow of the regular season. They're fine.
Man, you are really sold on LA.
It's not that I'm sold on LA. It's that I'm not. It's that I don't see anything on Denver that makes me think, oh yeah, they're probably going to win a series against the Clippers. Likely, yes. I'm sure a meteor could come out of the sky and hit Blake Griffin in the nuts, and he'd be out for the entire series. And they're Denver.
Yeah, it's just physical play by the
it's just the space. It's the universe being the universe. That's all that is. We saw it in Armageddon.
I guess I'm kind of surprised. Is it one where you kind of decided to look at Denver's roster and ignored it, or are you watching the games and are just like, no, I don't believe that this is...
No, I watch the games. Like, I see them. They're a very good team. There
are playoff teams I do not pay attention to for long stretches of time during the season. Like, the Knicks, I ignored for a long stretch because I was like, they're winning, they're playing well. Since I go through rotations where I catch up on them, like, I've watched several Knicks games over the last month and been like, ugh, which is not good, right? Like, I missed their good part, and I'm catching their bad part, which is going to leave me with a poor opinion of them.
No, the people that know me well know that I am competitive in an unhealthy way. Like, I don't take losing competition very well. And one of those things is debating about basketball. I don't like to be wrong. I am wrong quite a bit, but I don't like to be. So I watch everybody. Like, I watch as much as I can all day, every day. That's what I'm doing. I have a game on my computer while I'm watching a bad movie. Like, I watch everybody. And I watch the majority of the games. And, like, I get the sense from Denver that they are one of the teams I would never want to face in the regular season. Like, they're just those teams that are so good in the regular season because you catch them on the second half of back-to-back or a fourth game in five nights, or you're on a long road trip or whatever. Like, that team, just their style of play sucks when you have to catch them on a random night. But I think if you have time to prepare for them, especially because they don't have any 3-point shooters now, you have time to prepare for them and adjust game to game. I think they're competitive. I think they're really good. But I don't think that they have that team that can really make it to the Western Conference Finals. I mean, maybe if, you know, there's an injury with another team or something, you know, stuff could happen. But I think they're going to be a pain in the ass to beat in the playoffs. But I think they are going to be beat.
How irrelevant do you think they are? Is it like 5 wins, 6 wins, or 7 wins? Because these things are important to me. Like, people will say it doesn't matter the win loss. Like, no. Because this is the argument that's going on in Denver right now. Is because they're like, they have to get out of the first round. That's what's being said.
Yeah,
right,
I agree
now
with that. I think they do. I
so
think
they have to get out of the first round, and I'm like, look, if they land in the 4-5 and they go to 7 with Memphis and they lose, the Western Conference is a death trap.
Right.
It just is. It really is. And honestly, I will continue to say this. I really think that there's a good possibility of one of Oklahoma City or San Antonio being upset. I still will probably pick them to advance. But it does not mean that I am – it's not like in other situations or other years or in the East or wherever where I'm like, oh, I feel very confident that barring a – it's not one where I would be shocked. I would not be shocked if either the Thunder or the Spurs got knocked off just because of how screwed up the match
is. In the first round? If the Thunder don't – if the Thunder don't
– No, I would say not in the first round because I do think – I think Houston's really dangerous.
Oh, come on. If the Thunder don't make it to the Western Conference Finals, that is shocking. There is no reason for them to not make the Western Conference Finals.
I would agree with that. I'm more concerned with the Spurs. They're a team that's more matchup vulnerable.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, the Thunder are about as big of a lock to make the Conference Finals as you can get.
But speaking in these degrees, do you think Denver's, is it like, where do you put their ceiling right now?
Six games
in the second round, is that it?
The problem is they could lose in 4 or 5 games in the second round and still have had a great series.
Right.
I think they're a competitive team. I don't think they're going to get blown out in the playoffs. I don't think they're going to get swatted away like a fly, but I don't think they're not making the Western Conference Finals.
Okay.
Like, I think they could lose in 5 games or 6 games to the Thunder in the second round and feel good about themselves because it's probably going to be an awesome 5 or 6 games. Like, it's not like Denver's not a bad team.
There's two prevailing thoughts. Like, the Thunder fans are like, well, Wilson Chandler's never going to score like that again. He had a career high on Thursday. I will say this, against these teams, they're finding guys that are like, they have, it's one where if you have that guy, that's who you count on because he's consistently good. They have a lot of guys that have the capacity to step up, and that's kind of like the danger. It's, well, if none of them step up, then you're screwed and you don't have the consistency. Like, it's more likely that none of them step up than that one of them does. But the other option is they have more chances for a guy to step up and have a big game And if he does, that carries them a lot.
Yes, but here's the problem with that. That kind of hope of like, well, somebody can step up is that you can get locked in as a player and think, all right, I'm not having a very good game. Somebody else on this team is good enough to step up, so they probably will. And that's what I worry with them is that it's like, oh, anyone can do it tonight, and it's like, who's the anyone that's going to say I'm going to do it tonight? Like you can't go into a matchup thinking, oh, I hope one of our guys steps up. You have to have a plan to make a guy step up. You have to put somebody in, whether that's, hey, we're going to do, like, Corey, you're gonna leak out a lot tonight. Like, we're really going to push the tempo, and you need to get 20 points off the bench. Or,
well, that's kind of thing is their system allows them. Their system allows them to find things, because in the beginning, it's always like they'll be, like, everybody's getting touches and everybody's getting something. As the game goes along, Carl talked about this, about how there's like X touches, and then the last amount of possessions go to whoever's the most efficient on that given night.
Right, but here's the thing. Okay, they surprise. Let's say they're playing the Spurs, and they surprise them in the first game, like they just run all over them and get 35 fast break points and just have a huge win, huge blowout victory of the Spurs. The Spurs decide to drop back on into transition, and now the running game's taken away. Well, now that they're gonna pick them apart in the half court, and pick and roll happens, and maybe they eke out a second win, and then they start packing the paint against the pick and roll. Now you're relying on outside shooters who can't shoot. Like I think there's many adjustments you can make against the Nuggets to where the fact that they're missing that focus, and they have so many holes in their offense, and not that their offense isn't good, their offense is awesome. It's a really good system that can overwhelm you, but if the opponent doesn't get overwhelmed, which these top teams probably won't consistently, then where do you go? And that's what I worry about with them.
That's fair. I think that a lot of it is, and this is when I'm on the other side of it, and I'm trying to tell Nuggets fans to settle down. I use this term a lot in the playoffs. It's solvable.
Yeah.
It's if you're solvable, because that was kind of the issue with the Spurs for two rounds were completely unsolvable. And then in the second half of game two, and this needs to be said more often because people are like, where did that Thunder comeback come against the Spurs? Maybe that was just a fluke. And I'm like, no. The Spurs won game one convincingly. The Spurs won the first half of game two convincingly. The Thunder adjusted at the end of game two, and that was where the season ended.
Hack a splitter.
They started to make those adjustments. And once you – and it's a big problem once you're solid. And that's my concern with the Clippers right now, honestly, in terms of whether or not they can be a real contender, is I'm looking at them more and more, and I'm like, man, you know, there is only so much Chris Paul can do. There is only so much he can do, especially on both ends. And when you take away certain things, it becomes very dependent on, man, we really need Matt Barnes to hit this three. Like – it becomes a big deal of we really need Matt Barnes to hit this three. And once you start depending on those kind of things, man, we really need, you know, whoever the backup big is to get this rebound or whatever, things start to slowly kind of downgrade with them. And that's how the Thunder really controlled them on Sunday. And it's not a playoff series, but I do have concerns about that going forward. I feel like if we're going to stick with the chalk for Spurs Thunder, it's that those two teams are the hardest to solve.
Yeah, I mean, I think pretending that you can solve Chris Paul.
No, it's not. I'm not saying you can solve Chris Paul. You can't solve him. What you can do is basically it's one where he can make great assists, but if the guys aren't hitting the shots because they're not that good, then there's an issue.
Right, but then he just decides to score. Like, he's that good. Like, I would pick.
He's not going to average 40 points. He's not going to put up 30 plus consistently in a playoff series. It's just not who he is. That's not who he is.
He's going to have enough space to operate and do what he needs to do. He doesn't have to find guys to make shots on the perimeter all the time. Like, he can find guys inside. Like, he just dissects the defense that well to where, I mean, if you ask me to pick between the Thunder and the Clippers, I'm going to pick the Thunder. But if you ask me to pick between Spurs and Clippers, I don't know. I really don't know.
Wow. See, I think they're missing that pick and pop guy. That's a big element for me is I feel like Griffin's jumper's gotten a lot better, and I've been saying this, and you turned me on to how much better he's improved, and I've been paying attention to it, and he really, like, his shot really has been remade, and I think he's going to keep getting better every year with it, but he's definitely not there, and they miss that dynamic of having a guy that can run in that pick and pop. They really do.
Sure, but he's also turned that pick and pop into a dangerous, like, pocket pass on the side pick and roll. Like, he's adjusted it, And not that, I mean, you can take that away, but then that opens up cutting from the weak side. I mean, there's just so much that you can run off of trying to adjust to what Chris Paul does in a pick and roll, pick and pop, pick and slip, whatever, you know. And that's what
we're going to find out whether your confidence in these Clippers is well founded or not. It'll be I think that's like a really interesting question.
What I love is that people are going to take that me saying between the Spurs and Clippers, I don't know, as I think the Spurs are going to lose to the Clippers.
Right.
Which is exactly not what I said. It's just I really don't know.
No, you're saying that they're even. I don't think they're even, but I think that, you know. Are you saying they're even, or are you just saying that you like how the Clippers match up with them?
I mean the Spurs are better. The Spurs are a better team, but the Clippers, I think, have a higher potential in the playoffs because they have so many, like, they're just so deep.
It's going to be really interesting because the national narrative on them is a lot of concerns about their ability to run, to play defense and to work on the half-court set. And your confidence there is going to be, and I get what you're saying because I've been saying it too. I'm like, well, Chris Paul can run a half-court set. He's one of the best players in the league at running a half-court set. Why can't Chris Paul run a half-court set? And then the more I look at the roster, though, I'm like, they are dependent upon guys getting hot.
What's this idea, though, that they can't play defense?
It's mostly like a playoff level. It's mostly like,
what does
that
mean?
Guys are really going to lock down and be able to play tough and physical enough consistently.
Where we've seen the league go is play the pick and roll and have good wing defenders.
Right.
Well, they can play the pick and roll defensively, and they've got Matt Barnes, Caron Butler, and Grant Hill on the wing.
They're seventh in points per possession for via synergy. So I mean, you're right. There's every indication that they can.
And that's the thing that's what I worry. You know, we did that pop quiz series in the preseason, and one of the ones I did was, are the Clippers a contender? And at the time, I didn't really know, because we didn't know Blake Griffin was going to elevate his game and all this stuff and how the pieces were going to work. But the one thing I noted was, well, they couldn't stop anybody on the wings last year, and now they've got Grant Hill and Matt Barnes who are capable wing defenders, and how that works in, you know, maybe it won't matter, maybe it'll be solvable. Like, I'm not saying this is a defensive juggernaut, but they're a really good defense.
They've got one of their lineups is just absolutely incredible. With it's Paul, Crawford, Barnes, Griffin, Jordan.
Yeah.
That's their best lineup.
That's a good lineup.
Yeah, so,
because they can run with that lineup, they can execute in the half court. There's a lot they can do with that.
Yeah, I think it'll be fun. Knicks Heat. That was a. We talked about those statement games. To me, that was a pretty big statement game because LeBron literally just decided, no, it's over.
I don't know that the Heat take the Knicks seriously enough to make it a statement game. I think it's just LeBron decides when he doesn't want to lose.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's the weird thing. It's like a statement game. I really feel like both teams have to be involved with that.
Yeah.
And I think the Heat just showed, like, hey, we're a better team. Stop talking.
I would say it's a statement game only from the perspective of, I think that Miami was very unhappy with the fact that they lost the first two games, and then there was this chirping about the Knicks are a serious title contender. I do think that Miami in the second half especially wanted to be like, no, like, let's just make this very clear right now. No.
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting to see I'm not sure if the Pacers and Heat play again, but if they do, that last game will be kind of interesting to see if the Heat respond in a similar way, to just be like, let's just make this clear right now.
Right.
LeBron's great. People will say, would you guys quit talking about LeBron? And it's like, I don't know.
When he stops
doing
being
a disservice if we're not talking about him.
When he stops being historic, we'll stop talking about him.
Yeah, I mean,
he's
and
really
even
good.
Yesterday, like, the numbers weren't through the roof like they normally are. They were still fantastic. But
that's all right. Now that's both a correct, a dumb, and a scary statement all at the same time, because he went 29-11-7-3-1 with only two turnovers.
Yeah,
shot 52%, and the fact that we're going, well, it wasn't really a special game. Like, anybody else does that, we freak out.
We freak out,
and that's the thing. Like, that is, you're correct in saying it wasn't. He didn't do anything spectacular for him. It's dumb because, my God, look at those numbers. Look at the way he affected the game and closed the game. And then it's scary because the fact that that's not special for him.
Yeah, and that's the end. Why I wanted to say that his numbers were not the way he closed that game in terms of his defense was just
the steal and the score. That was like a oh, by the way, like, you guys don't get to win this game.
Have you seen J.R. Smith's line?
Yes, it was pretty awesome. I know he took 14 threes.
14 threes.
Smoke him if you got him.
I'm trying to Knicks fans love him, and I'm trying to let him know, like, man, he is going to lose you a playoff series. Like, when you lose, you were going to go, man, JR didn't come through for us. Wish, how could we have seen that coming? And I'm just going to shake my head.
One thing, you know, I love me some Jamal Crawford. I'm quite a fan of his. But he's always been a guy where I'm like, I don't know how I'd feel about him if he was on my team.
Right.
And I feel like J.R. Smith has had the opposite reaction with Knicks fans, where it's like they liked him when he was doing these shenanigans before he was on the Knicks, and now that he's on the Knicks, they like him even more.
Yeah.
It's like, yes, this guy's going to gun. We love this.
Yeah, but I mean, look at the shots that he hits, though. That's what I always get. And I'm like, if you take enough.
And Kenny Smith put it perfectly. I think this was last year or the year before. Or no, it was 2 years ago because he was still in Denver. But he said J.R. Smith only plays to make the highlight. And that's why he's not a better player. Like, he's got all the talent in the world, but he only plays for the highlight. And he really only does.
He has taken over for Michael Redd. Chris Ballard had a line about Michael Redd in his book, Art of the Beautiful Game, where a teammate described Michael Redd as bombs over Baghdad.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you hit the enemy, and sometimes you hit the civilians.
Yep.
That's J.R. Smith.
Yep.
Real quick on the Bynum stuff.
Yeah. This is confusing. I mean, one, I've never been a big Bynum fan, but not having him in the league and not getting to see him be a number one option, which fascinated me going into this year.
And having to watch, for me, it's having to watch all these Sixers games.
Sure. it does suck. Like, you hate to see a guy possibly lose a year to an injury.
He's looking at arthroscopic surgery, which would end his season, because that's how far we are. He'd be back, and you know, it'd take him 6 weeks to get back, and that's the rest of the season.
Yeah,
coming down to it, by the way. Look at last time we got like 48 days to playoffs.
Yeah, I'm planning all my vacations before the playoffs.
that's the right thing to do.
They're racking up.
I tell folks, I'm like, just bail. There's no reason. You know, he feels like he's, no matter what, he's going to get that max contract in free agency. A year ago, I would have thought that. I'm starting to wonder with the way the league is going in terms of, I feel like the media specifically hammered and just destroyed these teams that gave out these awful contracts so much that teams are really gun-shy now. And like, I feel like that's had a carryover effect to the trade deadline. I feel like teams are really worried about making a mistake with their money.
I don't know that I don't think it's media-driven at all. I think it's just, because of the luxury tax penalties coming up, and especially for repeat offenders, you just can't be wrong anymore.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it is. And even with that said, I still would have thought he was a lock to get a max contract. And I'm still thinking, yeah, it probably will happen. But the Steph Curry contract extension actually gives me pause. It's because the Warriors were very smart about it and said, you've got ankle problems. You know,
yeah.
4 years, $44 million. 2 years ago, if he comes up for an extension, he's getting the max.
Can you imagine if he get restricted this year?
Oh, God. I mean, he would have a lot of max offers from them right now, and they'd probably have to give him the 5 year to keep him. But that's the thing, is that the fact that because you wait for one team to change their ways, and then maybe everyone follows suit. Well, the Warriors gave him a contract to a young guy based up, you know, with very real injury concerns, and now maybe that kind of opens the floodgates a little bit. We're not going to give you this deal because you have concerns. I still think Philly does it, but I'm not confident in that.
I mean, I think that,
would you, if you're Philly, would you bite the bullet? You know, 4 year max.
You know me, I would sign and trade him as soon as possible for whatever he can get in restricted free agency. I would tank. I would trade Thaddeus Young. I would probably shop Drew Holiday, as good as he has been, as fantastic as he has been, just because I want to be absolutely sure. And I would do everything possible to pick up 3 lottery picks for the 2014 draft. That's what my entire strategy would be.
Yeah.
I would be like, okay, we have failed. Swing and a miss.
Here's the thing. Let's pretend we don't know about Andrew Wiggins or Jabari Parker.
If I don't know about that draft class,
yeah,
then...
Which isn't fair, because obviously people do know about that, especially scouts, but...
Right, but a lot of scouts are also going to be like, well, I mean, there's already starting to be the, well, Wiggins isn't that good, or, you know, he's really, there's actually people that are like, well, he's not that good, and I, you know, I don't know. I feel like you can tell when guys are going to be special, that we've picked up enough on that. And there are misses. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that it's not – there's a huge risk involved in that process. Like, yeah. That's a massive risk. I'm not denying that. My point is always, I would, if I'm in the situation the Sixers are in, I go for the massive risk, massive payoff, rather than trying to scramble together some disappointing level of mediocrity. Like,
yeah, but sometimes disappointing levels of mediocrity can get you the playoffs.
You're right. And yeah. I mean, you know, somebody at Sloan this past weekend, which you and I sadly did not attend, said that, you know, the first thing that GMs are trying to do is not win an NBA championship, is keep their job.
Yep.
So, you know, that's what everybody's trying to do, is they're just trying to keep their job. So,
yep.
I mean, I understand it. I mean, Bynum, it's just one where he hits you with concerns on so many levels. Decision-making,
right.
On and off court,
yeah.
Attitude, health, productivity, effort. Like, everything he gives you concern about, on top of his attitude about this entire process. And it's just, I mean, to me, I look at the most successful teams, and they have stars that aren't just massive talents that put in the work ethic. Say anything you want about LeBron James and him screwing off during games or dancing or laughing or his obsession with his brand. That guy puts in a ton of work to
yep.
be the physical beast he is.
Yep.
And it's not that Bynum doesn't put in any work, but there is a gap there between the guys. You know, Chris Paul is as dedicated a guy as you're going to find. He is obsessed with winning. And there's just guys that don't seem to have it. The big thing with Bynum for a long time has been that he doesn't care that much about basketball. I don't want to center my franchise around that. I would be aiming for a signing.
That's a good point, is the fact that there are those concerns that he just doesn't care. And that's another thing that probably is a topic for another day, but because we're going to be running long here. But we fault guys like, you know, we assume Vince Carter never wanted to be great enough. We assume that, you know, there are guys like Andrew Bynum who doesn't want it enough. Sometimes basketball is just a job to guys. It's you know, they're going to get paid a lot of money to do this job, and they have other interests, and so they're not going to be completely focused on it, and that's like how a lot of jobs are. Just the fact that they make a lot of money to do it and get to be celebrities, like, that kind of skews how we view this, but not everyone has to want to be great at basketball. Even
is
if you're giving
Bynum the center version of Baron Davis?
Yeah, kind of. That's the thing.
That's what I thought when you were talking.
Yeah, Baron Davis should be a Hall of Famer. He won't be, but he should have been. Baron Davis is one of the most gifted basketball players I've ever watched.
I want to ask this because this came up as the Mavericks gave up a 44-point third quarter.
Here's
the
thing. They should not play third quarters anymore.
Not at all. If you're the Mavericks and the Sixers come to you with an offer for, I don't know, they don't need Collison, but like Mayo.
Anybody that's not Dirk.
Mayo, Jay Crowder, and even a, I don't know, a 2014 lottery protected first rounder.
For Bynum?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. If you're Dallas? Absolutely.
Yeah. Wow.
Because what are you're losing Mayo, who has very much improved this year, but
is still Mayo.
He's
yeah.
still OJ Mayo. Jay Crowder. Everyone's excited about him, but there are probably two dozen Jay Crowders in the NBA right now.
Right.
And a lottery-protected pick for a center you can hopefully get healthy and win with, I would absolutely do that. Yeah. I wouldn't even have to think about that.
I think, for me, it's mostly that there are certain guys that get to a poison level where I don't even want to go near them.
Yeah, that's fair.
And again, bear in mind that if my objective is winning a championship, I have like very specific things in mind.
Yeah.
I'm not really of the persuasion that there's multiple ways to skin a cat, which is odd because I'd be like, you know, I've been on this podcast being like, but the Denver Nuggets can be dangerous, but
literally 30 minutes ago.
if you want to hit that, you have a, you know, even better, you know, an even 40% chance of winning a title if things go right.
Yeah.
Which still takes a lot of luck and a lot of things going your way. I think there are certain things that you need to instill in your organization, and it's a commitment to winning. It's a leader that is a quantifiable superstar talent that has the right attitude.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like if you're ever like, man, we're really, you know, and that's the thing is we're looking at Bynum, and it seemed like a good idea. I mean, I praised the deal in in the summer, and I don't blame the Sixers for doing it. They took a swing. I don't blame them for doing it. You take a swing and you hope that he matures and comes into his brain and really works hard. And there's no reason to think that that's not possible. I want to say that too.
Yeah, for sure.
They could re-sign him on a four-year deal. He undergoes a religious transformation or something, and all of a sudden is like, I'm really focused. I really want to do the good things in my life. I really want to accomplish a lot professionally.
Yeah.
And then everything comes together. This is not that it can't happen. It's just that
I
also think that you have to go with the evidence you've been presented with, and all the evidence about Bynum is ugh.
Idea. They presumably have three-point shooters, right? They've got Richardson. They've got Darrell Wright.
Nick Young.
They've got that. They've potentially have a big man in the middle. Why not fire Doug Collins and see what Stan Van Gundy can do with that team?
Yeah, I mean that's the flip side of it. Is if you get a high efficiency coach, like this entire season is better.
Yeah.
Like Collins has underperformed with this group, which is odd because he overperformed so much last year. I mean that defense was, and honestly, at the beginning of this year, it was a monstrous defense. Injuries kind of took their toll as the season went on. They just couldn't sustain.
He also had one of the best defensive players in the league, though.
Yeah,
and Elton Brand was really good on defense last year.
Yeah, I mean, but even this year, they started off and they were really great defensively. I think Collins is a really good defensive coach. I cannot personally stand his offensive approach because he values the mid-range two-point shot, which to me is like holding out that the world is flat. Like, it's holding on to this relic that everyone's kind of been like, well, no. Like,
I'm gonna toot my own horn here because I am wrong so often, but there was, you know, we've seen this cycle with Collins before, and during the Olympics and stuff, people were talking about, oh, should Doug Collins be the next coach of the Olympic team? And I was like kind of joking around, like, oh yeah, we should get a guy who alienates his players to at a certain point to come in and coach the Olympic team. And people were like freaked out, like, because he had just had this great season in Philly, and they're like, oh, come on, Doug Collins, he's a great coach, everyone loves him, everyone respects him. I'm like, yeah, until you have to play for him.
Yeah,
and everywhere he's gone, you know, year two, year three, people don't like playing for him anymore. And we're kind of seeing, like, and this year's not that fair because they've had a ton of injuries, but still, like, we're seeing the pattern.
Collins seems like a genuinely really great guy.
Seems like an awesome guy
and cares about winning and like tries to do things the right way.
And is very intelligent, like very intelligent coach. I think he knows the league, even with the long two thing. Like he knows basketball, clearly.
Part of his biggest problem is, like, do you notice how much time he spends complimenting all the other players?
Yeah.
Like, he stopped Bradley Beal the other day, like, last night, and after Beal got hurt, and was like, Jeremy, and the guy's wrong, name wrong, but anyway, he was like, Jeremy, oh, Bradley, I'm sorry. He's like, get better, thinking of you. Like, that guy, and like, was telling the media, like, that guy's a great player. Like, he's going to be a really great player in this league. Like, he complimented Vucevic, who he traded and didn't play. Like, what, you know, and it's one where compliment your own players, like, you know.
I just like to think that they're like, they ask him, like, hey, what do you think about Drew Holiday making the All Star team? And he's like, wow, that Kyrie Irving's really having a good year.
And I will say that he's not the only coach like that. A lot of those older coaches, I think, will do the same thing.
Yeah, we saw the same thing with Skiles. You know,
I have to deliberately prod George Karl to get him to talk about Corey Brewer. Like, no matter what Brewer does, because like Karl the other night was like, you know, our steals in the second half really got our offense going, and that's really what helped us get that lead. And I was like, well, Corey Brewer had four steals in the second half.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, you know, I just think our entire defense. I'm like, I don't know whether it's he's trying to protect, like, trying to keep Brewer's value down.
It could be that he's worried about too much getting to Brewer's head, because I did see an Instagram from JaVale McGee the other day with, it was Brewer, Fareed, and I think McGee, and he said, like, the three best friends or something like that. And I was thinking, oh, that's a weird crowd for those two to be hanging out with.
Yeah, and they are buds, too. That's a
Those
guys are close, especially Fareed and JaVale are our buddies. Buddies in the We Hate the Media, especially, too.
Right.
All right, quickly, three games.
Yes.
Bucks at home, favored by 4.5 versus the Jazz.
I don't like betting on Jazz games.
Milwaukee. I think Milwaukee's – I think they're not past their slump. They're going to still have struggles throughout the rest of the regular season. But I think that they've kind of at least figured out a model for them to succeed. And I'm liking more and more what I'm seeing for them. Brandon Jennings filling up the assist sheet the other night, too, by the way.
Yeah.
Playing like a point guard. I like that he's finding different ways to contribute. He's learning
– I really
like that he's – He's not just, I'm going to shoot all the time.
I really like him when he plays like a point guard. Mm-hmm. That's when I think he's at his best. That's when I think he manages games really well, manages half court really well. And if he uses his ability to get by guys, to set other guys up, rather than just look for a bad shot for himself, I think he's awesome.
Although one of my favorite moments from the last week was, there was an outlet pass to Jennings who leaked down, was way ahead of the pack. I think it was actually one of those transitions where guys were halfway back. So it's kind of a cherry pick. Anyway, Ellis throws it up to him, and Jennings has a wide open layup. Just a wide open layup. But he's working on like 9 assists. Or I think he was actually at 10. He stops, turns around, and then dishes to Ilyasova, who almost gets caught by the trailing defender for the block.
Yeah.
And the Bucks announcer's like, that's just teamwork. You know, that's just rewarding teammates for hard work. And I'm like, no, that's shopping for assists to drive your box score up.
We're not allowed to criticize media members, right?
No.
Okay, then I'll just move on.
Wolves.
Oh, it's gonna be bad.
Oh no. Minnesota is at home versus the Heat on a back to back.
Lay the points.
It's 9.5.
Oh my god. I was expecting 14.
Yeah. 14 seems more likely
here. Miami's easily going to win by 10. Easily. Even in Minnesota, even on a back-to-back. The one thing I am interested to see, and this was definitely a different team last year, but Minnesota hung, this was really early in the lockout season last year, but Minnesota hung tough with Miami throughout the majority of the game and actually had a chance to win it. And in the last few minutes of the fourth quarter, well, actually, I think the majority of the fourth quarter, Spoelstra put LeBron on Ricky Rubio, and this was like three games into Rubio's career, and wow. he just said, all right, we're done with this. Like, we're gonna put LeBron on Rubio. And Rubio still did all right, but it definitely took away a lot of his playmaking, as you would expect. And I think that Rubio is playing better than he did at any point last year. And I'm interested to see how much they put LeBron on Rubio tonight early, just to kind of get the game. Just even more disjointed than it's going to be for Minnesota.
Let me sell you on this, okay? Barea loves playing against the Heat.
Oh, he does.
Okay. Pekovic is going to have a lot of advantage versus Bosch, who's not playing very well
right
now.
If Peck plays.
Kirilenko is not going to play, right?
I don't know yet.
Okay, if he plays, that's a big one.
Yeah.
That's a biggie. Well, that's all I got. That's the only thing I got to try and sell you on is basically Rubio, Barea, if Peck plays, and Kirilenko's ability to defend.
Yeah, and what are you trying to sell me on right now?
That they can cover.
Interesting.
Against a Heat team that, you know, back-to-back.
I mean, have you been drinking during this podcast?
Warriors are giving 6.5 to the Raptors at home. I think the Raptors are done. I think that Bucks loss broke them.
Maybe. The Warriors, they are... I'm trying to remain positive about them.
I was saying the other day, I was like, this is real trouble. And they're like, they're fine. They've got all these home games coming up. I was like, that doesn't change the fact that they've sucked in every single game.
Yeah, they do. I mean, they do have an enormous amount of home games the rest of the year. So maybe the crowd can rally them a little bit and they can build up some momentum. But, God, their defense sucks.
Yeah. It's really unraveled. They don't get that fixed. They're not going anywhere in the playoffs.
Yeah.
That's one team. If they wind up in a 4-5 versus Denver, that's bad.
Oh, I would definitely take Denver, I think. I think it'd be close. I think it probably goes like 7, but I would take Denver over Golden State in a 4-5.
How about this? The Cavs are only getting 3 at home versus the Knicks. Kyrie is probable. Dion Waiters, who's had a fantastic month. Yes, Cavs fans, he's had a fantastic month. Is questionable with he's sick, but the Cavs are only getting 3.
The Dion Waiters dysentery game.
I guess it's.
Is that what?
Is that every game?
Is that what he has?
Where he's just doing something all over the court.
Is it the flu? Yeah, I mean, Knicks should run away with that, right?
You would think. I mean, unless there's some sort of serious injury that we're not privy to.
Theory. I haven't looked into the timing of this, or I've done no research on this, but I still have this theory.
Excited.
Knicks fell apart when Rasheed Wallace went down.
That's pretty provocative. That's actually pretty interesting.
I mean, The numbers are there. I don't know if they're there, but I assume they're there.
That's pretty interesting. Nuggets are given 10 to the Hawks, who are on a back-to-back in Denver.
This Hawks team's playing good.
They didn't last night. They looked real beat up last night. They looked real tired.
Yeah, but...
But I will say teams that usually look tired on the front end get irritated. Like, the game frustrates them.
Yeah, they can bring it a little bit.
Mentally get back up.
Yeah. What's the line?
10.
10's a lot. I think I like Denver to win by like 7.
You like the Hawks to cover? Okay.
I think so.
I think I'm probably going to take the Nuggets just because...
I definitely think Denver wins.
I think Atlanta's... Like, Atlanta keeps doing the same where they ramp really high up and they kind of downgrade a little bit and then ramp really high up. Like,
yeah.
It's like an engine going up and down.
Yeah.
Wow, Blazers given 13 to the Bobcats at home.
The Bobcats had a Mavericks third quarter last night against the Kings. That's not good. One of my buddies who works for the Kings Instagrammed a shot of the scoreboard at one point where the Kings were up 41 on the Bobcats.
I actually have to mention this tonight to the Nuggets. I'm going to try and get their reaction because I feel like the Nuggets are going to overlook the Kings, who are playing exceptionally well right now. This is the best they play all year.
Yeah.
They are legitimately playing well.
Kevin Johnson rallies the city.
I guess. Final game of the night or on the list is the Hornets are given 9 to the Magic, who have been a fun disaster. Can't cover, can't win.
9's a lot. Is Gordon playing?
Who knows?
Does it matter?
Who knows?
I'm riding with the Magic. Abracadabra. I think they cover.
Okay.
I think they lose by 8.5.
I like them too, just because the Magic, and it's really funny because people are just like, oh, the Magic are horrible, and I try to explain, like, they're just young. They just don't know what they're doing.
I'm all in on Tobias Harris. I think Tobias Harris goes for 60. How about that? How about that for a prediction? Book it.
Well, this has been a long and good podcast.
Yeah, we got out in under an hour, though. Wait, before we go, I want to talk about John Wall.
Oh, let's talk about John Wall.
I just love that David Falk, probably accurately, the super agent, David Falk, probably accurately pegged John Wall versus Kyrie Irving because he's saying Kyrie Irving isn't as athletic, isn't as strong, but he is better because he's a better basketball player. And I mean, he did say John Wall will never be as good as Kyrie was his first week, which that's extreme. That I don't agree with, but Kyrie is a better point guard, or at least a better player. And so he was apparently at the game yesterday. John Wall hits a huge shot to bury whoever they were playing, Philly, and then just allegedly stares down David Falk, which was awesome.
Yeah, the stare down was pretty brutal, too.
It was long. It was great. It was Myers-Leonard dunking on a point guard stare down.
Who was it? Somebody mentioned like, maybe hitting the go-ahead shot versus another lottery team who's in complete disarray. Is it the best way to show the...
Disagree. Show the baby out? Steps. Baby steps to the win column.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, the Wizards legitimately aren't as terrible as we thought they were going to be at the beginning of the year. And that's a lot to do with Wall. You have to credit Wall.
Hey, speak for yourself. I had him for 35 wins, stupidly.
I bought in. I did buy in. But I was talking about what I'm more referring to how we pegged them after their first, like, 2 weeks. And we were like, this team's a disaster.
I mean, they were. And without Wall, they are. But Randy Whitman's an awful coach. I still say that. He's an awful coach. But John Wall is a very good player. And he can help lead them. He gives them balance.
Yeah, playoffs are coming, man.
I'm ready. I'm ready to go on vacation before they're here.
George Karl said the other day, he said that he thinks that it's hard to get players to really get focused until St. Patrick's Day. He says that St. Patrick's Day is when you can start getting guys get locked in for the playoffs, which I thought was interesting because I always tend to think of late March, early April is the worst time.
A lot of Irish roots. Everyone's waiting for St. Patrick's Day to come so they can celebrate, get it out of their system. I get that. That's just how the NBA has always been.
A lot of Irish roots. That should be the name of the podcast.
Yeah, that's the one I want to explain to the editors. We're like, why did you name this?
they need to appreciate your artistic freedom.
Sure.
All right, thanks, Zach. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks, man.